You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang. Hey,
this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Anthony McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvage.
Hey everybody, this is Joe Meltier, Jay Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hunting here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is El Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
The name of the show is Full Contact Fighter Radio. I am your host, Kelsey Mowat, coming to you from Vancouver, British Columbia. And joining me, as always, Mr. Brendan Lear, coming to you from Edmonton, Alberta. And Brendan, no good news on the waterfront, buddy. We're going to be boiling our water here in Vancouver for a couple more days yet.
Has it stopped raining?
No, it rained a ton today. Like, it was crazy. Pretty bad downpour for at least a few hours this afternoon, but yeah, so as a result, looks like the boiling tap water is going to continue for a couple more days as all the water reservoirs up in the mountains are full with mud and stuff. So speaking
as someone who comes who grew up in a very sunny place like the prairies, don't you feel like jumping off a bridge having it rain for so many days in a row?
Never really bothered me, to be honest. I like being away from the minus 20 blizzards that you guys get, so. Isn't it, like, so super cold in Edmonton the last little bit?
Are you saying that your normal moroseness, everyday moroseness, and propensity to fall into deep cynical depressions can't even be phased by seasonal affective disorder?
That's what I'm saying. Mm. That's right.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's freezing cold here, and it snowed like 15 feet here today or something like that. You can tell when you're shoveling your driveway and you get gassed that you should probably work out a little bit more.
Yeah, that's always the first sign.
When your neighbors come over and they say, you're looking good for the first few minutes there, but man, you totally gassed. I thought you were going to win that one, but...
The sad thing is think how many listeners right now just... probably don't, A, give a damn about what we're talking about, and B, cannot even begin to understand any of the experiences you've just been talking about as far as shoveling snow. That could be a foreign experience for many of our listeners.
Yeah, it's heavy. It's not, it's not as light as it feels on your tongue.
Well, somehow we gotta segue this into mixed martial arts.
Everyone has that line that you just can't cross. No matter how mad we get, we're told to turn the other cheek and communicate our feelings. December 2nd, live on pay-per-view, we'll see some things are worth fighting for. Bodog Fights, USA versus Russia. 8 members of Team USA will face members of the legendary mixed martial arts team, the Russian Red Devils. Plus, Super Fights, Gracie versus Waterman, Silva versus Pele, and Alvarez versus Riley. Live on pay-per-view or visit BodogFight.com for more details.
The best off for MMA clothing is definitely the Full Contact Fighter shop, because with FCF gear, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. Go check it out by now. I know you've seen it. That classic FCF logo on so many great items, like our classic t-shirts, tricot jackets. We've got new high-quality rash guards, plus the NXP Extreme Fight shorts, which are available in red, black, navy, or camo. Of course, don't forget about our fantastic FCF hoodies, a variety of NHB corduroy and distress wash hats, plus now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We've got a wide assortment of International Fight League merch, all your favorite teams there. Just head to www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. That number again is 516-676-0033. Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining us now en route to his Thanksgiving dinner, and we appreciate him taking some time out today, is Luigi Fioravanti, who is going to be fighting Dave Manet coming up December 13th at UFC Fight Night, which is going to be held for the Marine Corps at the Air Station Miramar. And Luigi, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing really good. I'm feeling good.
Is it going to be tough today with the fight coming up? Are you still going to be able to fully enjoy the Thanksgiving meal that is going to be in front of you in a couple hours here?
Yeah, I'm going to be eating, certain things, so because I'm trying to watch my weight.
Yeah.
Can't go out and eat pie and a bunch of crap, so I'm just going to have a little turkey, and that's probably about it. Maybe a little bit of lettuce or something.
Well, maybe after the fight, you can have, there'll be some leftovers still kicking around for you.
Oh, definitely, man.
Now, you're taking on Dave Monet, who's a very accomplished veteran fighter, former UFC champion, in fact. Luigi, when you're approaching a guy like Dave, what's the game plan going to be, and what is your thoughts about fighting a guy that's got such a storied past in the UFC?
Well, you know, Dave Monet, you know, he's a really experienced fighter, and, you know, he's, like, you know, like you say, he's a former middleweight champion, but I think he's a little bit past his prime, you know. I think it's my time, you know. It's I think he's a little bit, you know, older, and now he's stepping up and fighting these, you know, tougher, younger guys. You know, nowadays, everybody knows how to, everybody has a ground game, everybody has a stand-up game, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm an all-around fighter, you know, so, I mean, either way it goes, if he wants to stand up on the feet, hey, so be it, you know. I plan on knocking him out anyway. If it goes to the ground, you know, I'm going to take advantage of it with, you know, my jiu-jitsu, and, or I'll just ground and pound him.
In today's modern day of mixed martial arts, there's clearly a lot more tape on guys than there used to be, say, 3-4 years ago even. But when you got a guy like Dave Monet who's had so many fights, I got to imagine that, you know, it's been pretty easy for you to catch a lot of tape and watch his fights. Or are you a fighter that even does that? Some guys don't even bother to watch tape.
Well, you know, it's, you know, my last three fights, really, I haven't seen tape on my fight, you know, on the guys that I fought. And there were, you know, all three of them were tough fighters. And, you know, I just went in there and, I just did my thing, you know. You know, I've seen a couple of clips of Dave Monet's older fights. You know, I don't think that's really going to help me now. I'm trying to get, you know, one of his more recent fights. You know, I would like to watch some tape on it, yeah, if I could. But it doesn't really matter to me either way.
Now, have you, you know, come up with, you mentioned that you feel you're a very well-round fighter, whether it's on the ground or standing. Do you have a preference going up against Dave Monet? Have you even put together a game plan in that respect, or are you just going to kind of wait and see where the fight goes?
Well, you know, I plan on going in there and doing my thing, man. You know, wherever the fight goes, it goes. You know, I would like to keep it on my feet, because I'd like to make it a quick night, you know, get in there, knock him out, and get out and get paid, you know.
Now, you train with American Top Team down in Florida, very famous gym. It seems like every card there's more and more of the fighters from that gym, you know, whether it's in Japan, all over the States. Luigi, is there anyone in particular that you spend a lot of time training with? I mean, there's so many great fighters there and great instructors, but is there a couple of people that have helped you prepare for this fight more this time in particular?
Well, I worked a little bit with, you know, different guys, you know, in general. I mean, I like to get everybody's, you know, their angle, their view of, you know, what I should do and stuff, you know. So, I mean, there's not one particular person that I worked with, you know. I live up in Orlando, and, you know, we have a group of guys that I train with up there, Paul Rodriguez and Seth Petruzzelli. So, and then when I get a chance, I'll go down and train at Coconut Creek at the main academy, and I train with all the guys there.
Yeah. Your first appearance in the UFC was a loss to Chris Lieben. You've got a record now of 10-1. That's your only loss. When you look back at that fight, Luigi, now, is there anything you would have done differently? What did you take from that, your only loss?
Well, the first thing, I probably would have gone into the fight injured. I didn't really, you know, take a beating or anything in that fight. It's just I was rolling around with Jeff Munson the week before, and I think I popped some cartilage in my ribs, you know, and my ribs are real banged up, you know. I couldn't breathe or anything. So in the fight, I was just exhausted, but I didn't want to pull out, you know, the last minute. So I went ahead and just got in there, and you know, whatever, you know. So that outcome was whatever it was, you know.
So you obviously feel it would have been a lot different story if you hadn't been fighting injured.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm not saying I would have won the fight or anything, but I would have put up a hell of a lot more of a fight, you know what I'm saying? Like, he would have had a tougher time taking me down, and he would have had a tougher time, you know, doing what he did, you know. So, but I wasn't 100% going into that fight.
Now, after that fight, you head up to Canada and you competed at Apex, taking on one of Canada's tougher middleweight fighters, Stefan Potvin, who doesn't necessarily have a great record, but, you know, me and myself being Canadian, follow Stefan's career, he's been in the ring against some top-flight competition. What did that mean for you, Luigi, to bounce back and get a win, you know, only a couple months after the loss to Lieben.
Oh, yeah, man, it was a great accomplishment. You know, I felt a little bored to get back in there, and I went, you know, three rounds with Pop, and he's a tough guy. I wanted to knock him out in the first round, and I was pretty much swinging for the fences the whole fight. But that guy's got a hell of a chin, and he's a good fighter, man. You know, and a lot of those losses, you know, I mean, he's fought like, you know, some of the top guys around, you know, and those are who he's lost to, but he's also beaten some top guys too.
Yeah.
It was a great accomplishment, winning that fight.
And then after that, you take on Solomon Hutcherson, who I think it's safe to say, you know, was one of the more notable fighters from the Ultimate Fighters in that season, and certainly another accomplished fighter. What did that mean for you? Did you get the feeling that the UFC was maybe bringing you in to lose to Solomon? Do you think they maybe underestimated your abilities because of the fight against Lieben, or was it just a case of?
Oh, I definitely think they brought me in to build up their guy. You know, I mean, that's what they do. They want to build up their tough guys, and you know, I mean, the Ultimate Fighter guys. I mean, that's just what they do. You know, those guys are marketable. You know, I took that fight on like, you know, maybe a week's notice, if that. You know, it was right after the Poppin fight. You know, and I was a little banged up from that fight, but you know what? I didn't care. I just wanted to get right back in the ring and show everybody, you know, that my last performance with Lieben was I thought it was a fluke. You know, I mean. So I got back in there and I got the KO and it felt really good. And afterwards, I had a few drinks and ate a lot of food.
Well, you had a TKO victory over Hideki Manma right after that as well. But in light of the fact that Hutcherson is, you know, a fairly well-known fighter via the Ultimate Fighter television show, would you say that was your biggest win to date, Luigi, as far as taking out a big-name guy like that?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, but definitely, he was a really good fighter also, you know, I give him a lot of respect for stepping in the ring. He caught me actually in the first round, he dropped me, and I was able to get back up, and then I dropped him with a right hand and finished the fight on the ground with some punches. So it was a real big win for me, and it was in front of Japan, you know, and the crowd, the fans in Japan, you know, so hopefully, got a lot of respect from the Japanese promoters and stuff.
Now, your situation with the UFC right now, do you have a three-fight deal in place, or is it kind of one at a time?
No, I had a three-fight contract, and this is my last fight on that contract.
Okay. Now, when you scope around the UFC middleweight division, obviously, you know, Anderson Silva becoming the champion, somewhat seen as an upset to some people, taking out Rich Franklin, to others not so much. When you take a look at, I know you don't want to look past Dave Manet, Luigi, but when you look around the middleweight division, I mean, there's a lot of talent in that division. Is there any other guys that you see yourself wanting to take on in the immediate future here?
Well, here's the thing. This fight is going to be at welterweight.
Oh, it is at 170. Oh, okay.
I'm staying at 170, yeah. You know, I'm eating a lot better than I usually do. I got a nutritionist and everything, and, you know, my weight's coming off a lot faster, and, you know, I feel a lot better. So, when I get down to that weight, you know, I'm going to be able to move these guys around a lot easier, you know, and because I'm used to fighting bigger guys.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because the UFC, the website still has a list at 185, and I know Dave Manet has competed at 170 recently, but I mean, I guess...
Yeah, fight at 170.
I guess in that respect, then, what were your thoughts on the George St. Pierre-Matt Hughes fight? Did you, who had you picked to win that fight before the... going in?
Man, I picked St. Pierre just because he was just hungry, you know, like, he's young, and that guy probably trains like an animal, you know, and he just wants that belt so bad, and, the guy's a specimen, man, you know, he's all around just a great athlete, you know, real talented person.
Well, then certainly there's going to be no lack of opponents for you if you're looking to fight at 170, a very deep, talented division as well. So again, I'll ask you that question. I mean, do you see yourself, is there anyone out there that you think might make a great fight?
I'll take on anybody in the welterweight division. I mean, there's not one specific person that, fingering, but, you know, I mean, you know, I'll take on anybody that, you know, if the UFC wants to throw whoever in front of me, you know, I'll fight them.
Do you feel that some people are looking past Joe Riggs a little bit? I mean, everyone is kind of just taking it for granted that Diego will win.
Yeah, I think definitely. I think people are, like, underestimating him because, I mean, you never know, you know, with Riggs because, like, you know, sometimes he's on and sometimes it's not his day, you know. Like, he can come in there and, you know, if he hits you, if he gets that one punch off, you know, he can probably put you to sleep.
Yeah.
And he's a really big guy at 170. He's real strong and, he's a lot bigger than the rest of them.
My final question for you, Luigi. You're still fairly young into your career, 10-1 record, and you know, this is going to be your third fight in the UFC. When you take a look at just the popularity explosion for the sport, a few years ago when you got into this, did you ever imagine that it would get to this point? And what's it been like for you as a fighter as far as looking, planning for the future? Does it mean more to you now, or does it get your hopes up more so as far as some security, looking at the way the sport has grown so much?
Like, when I first started off 2 years ago, you know, I kind of knew the sport was getting big because, you know, I go to the smaller local shows and, you know, they'd be sold out, you know. I mean, people were, like, really, you know, getting into it, you know. And then when that TV show, The Ultimate Fighter, came on, you know, it really blew up, you know, really went mainstream. So I think in the near future, I mean, I think it'll surpass a lot of major sports, you know, and then we'll be watching it on ESPN or, you know, who knows, you know, they'll show it, you know, on different, more than just one channel, you know, ITV and FSN.
Yeah. Well, Luigi, we appreciate you coming on the show. Luigi Ferravanti taking on Dave Manet, December 13th at Ultimate Fight Night coming up. Have a good Thanksgiving, man, and thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
The best coverage of the toughest fighters in the toughest sport can only be found in Full Contact Fighter. For over a decade now, FCF has been bringing mixed martial arts fans across the globe in-depth reporting of the world's greatest sport. From Brazil, Japan, Europe, Canada, and the U.S., FCF brings you all the fighter bios, event reports, training and technique tips any avid MMA fan would want. Every month, 12 times a year, we do it. Full Contact Fighter is your best source for MMA coverage. Pick up the latest edition of the paper by subscribing at www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. Again, the number 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world. And when you call, tell them that FCF Radio sent you.
You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey, it's Mark the Machine Homnick, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mullen.
It's nice for us to welcome back Mr. Sean Tompkins to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and I guess if people say that Monty Cox is the busiest guy in American mixed martial arts, then Sean, you might very well be the busiest Canadian in mixed martial arts.
Well, that's an honor. If I'm compared to Monty Cox at any time, that's a big honor for me.
You're an extremely busy guy, and it's nice to have you on the show because we can go through several of your fighters and get an update on what's going on with all these guys. The first one I want to ask you about is Mark Hominick, and there's been like some speculation on what he's doing next. I know he's going to be fighting at the Ring of Fire card coming up here in Colorado, I believe, in December. But maybe, Sean, you can clarify on who his opponent is going to be?
Yeah, well, we've got Mark fighting on December 9th in Colorado. I believe the opponent that we've been chosen to fight is Eric Payne, a fighter out of Nebraska. Eric is known for defeating Dwayne Bang Ludwig in one of Dwayne's MMA fights. So it's a fight we're going to do here in December to help us prepare, you know, obviously not look ahead, but help us prepare for the rematch with Hatsu Hioki.
When it was announced that Mark was going to be competing at Ring of Fire, I think some people who maybe only follow the UFC end of things were somewhat surprised. I know if you read on some of the forums, there was a lot of speculation and questions from some fans wondering why this was. So maybe from that point of view, like you just mentioned, he's going to be having a rematch against Hatsu Hioki for his TKO title in the new year. Was that the main thought process behind this, just to keep Mark as busy as possible?
Yeah, I mean, with Mark is a fighter that, you know, he trains 365 days a year. He's just one of those kind of people. So for me as a manager and trainer, it's very important for me to keep him busy as a fighter as well. And ever since his loss with Hatsu Hioki, he's been very focused on the regaining of the TKO title. And, you know, Mark's a real special guy, and when he's focused on something like that, it's real important for me to make it happen and to make it happen in the right direction. So, as far as the future right now, it's December 9th at Ring of Fire, and then February 9th back at the Bell Center in Montreal in TKO, and then hopefully we'll look at the UFC. I know Mark's a huge fan of fighting for the UFC and the UFC fans, so we'd love to get back and do that again, too.
Okay, so there's nothing actually in the works as far as his third UFC appearance yet?
No, nothing yet. We haven't been contacted, but I'm sure. I mean, we're getting close to the end of the year, and I know these last two UFC cards have been, pretty much decided for quite a few months. So, we'll wait. We'll get the call from Joe Silva or Dana White, and we're really looking forward to Mark's return in the UFC.
Now, you mentioned the TKO card, which is going to be held at the Bell Center again in February in Montreal, Quebec, which is where the Montreal Canadiens play. For those people who don't know, they had a show there in September. And Sam Stout took on Jay Estrada and avenged that loss earlier in his career. What's going on with Sam Stout? Is anything in the works for him? And what about him returning to the UFC? Any discussions on that route?
Well, as far as the UFC goes, I don't think it's really, it just hasn't been in the cards for Sam and Mark. Just because their cards for the fall have been already, placed and set.
Yeah.
Especially with the TKO show, the way it's set, it landed as its date, kind of threw us off with scheduling. But now I'm sure in the new year he'll be back with the UFC. I know they really like Sam's performance and the character that he carries and the way he fights. So, again, he's looking forward to a return there as well. As well as he's got a few other opportunities, coming up, maybe in California as well as, fighting in TKO. And, he's the TKO lightweight champion, and that's, the TKO organization for us is definitely where we set, our priority, because that's where we started, and that's where, my boys have held their titles and where they get the fight. So that's where it's at for him. February 9th is a for sure thing for Sam. He'll certainly be defending his title there. So.
Okay, that leads into my next question. Is there any names being bannered about on who might be a possible opponent for Sam for defend his title against?
All that we've asked is to be an American fighter. We'd like to, being the world lightweight title, we'd like to make sure it's an American fighter, and we kind of run our course through the Quebec fighters and the Canadian fighters out here as far as that division goes, and we want to keep the quality or the level of competition for Sam up nice and high right now. He's been doing really well in his fights, and obviously avenging his loss with a tap-out victory to Jay Estrada. We want to keep his level up nice and high, so.
Another fight I wanted to ask you about that's kind of really starting to get some buzz is Krzysztof Soszynski. He had a tough time last year, and late 2 years ago, had a few losses, and he's strung a few together now in a row, a few victories. Big victories. He's taken out Devin Cole most recently. I think he's won four in a row now. And is he going to be, there's people talking that he's going to be fighting Mike Whitehead at the IFL Finals on December 30th, I believe is the date. Is that a confirmation? Is that a go?
Yeah, absolutely. That's 100%. Bob Rutten and myself talked it over, and the offer was made by the IFL. I mean, Krzysztof is the man right now in the heavyweight division out in the IFL, and he's made a complete about face as far as his career goes. I think for Krzysztof it was just a matter of he had the tools and, the size for a heavyweight. It was just a matter of him getting the correct training with Bob and myself, and I don't see him being very, I don't think anybody in the ISL can stop him right now, but Mike Whitehead is his next step, and right now we're just in the position of putting a game plan together for that fight on the 29th of December.
Okay. And Krzysztof recently won the heavyweight TKO championship as well, didn't he? Take it on Ichel Arenas?
Yeah, that's right. He's now the TKO World Heavyweight Title Champion, so, there we go again. He's not only won his last four fights, but winning a world title is obviously going to, it puts him up there in a higher ranking for the heavyweights. So we're happy with that. And if anybody in the sport deserves it, Krzysztof Soszynski does.
There's so often people make comments about the UFC heavyweight division that perhaps it's lacking a little bit in depth. And to be fair, I think those comments are always made in light of the extreme amount of talent they have in their middleweight and welterweight divisions, even their lightweight divisions. could you see at some possible point? I mean, I know Christophe, we've had him on the show. He's very happy in the IFL. But could you see him having an impact possibly in the UFC at some point in the future?
You know, always, you know, from day to day in this sport, you know, even though it's evolving, it's still young, anything can happen. And, you know, the UFC, I have a great relationship with them, myself, and I know Christophe isn't against anything with him, but right now he's real happy with the IFL, and he's happy to be, you know, their number one heavyweight. And he's real proud of his TKO title. So, I mean, we get to a point right now where we have to kind of pick and choose our opportunities. And, you know, there's so many of them out there. It's just, it's a timing thing. You know, our guys can only fight so many times a year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the opportunities are there. We respect the UFC heavyweight division, actually. You know, people can talk, but people are always going to, you know, criticize or, you know, but for us, it's just always a time and a place. And, you know, our time and place will come, and you know, whether it be with the IFL or the UFC or TKO, Christophe's going to be a dominating force, and that's just how we look.
Well, it's really nice that mixed martial arts has grown to this point where everybody has so many options, which couldn't be said, you know, even 2-3 years ago.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I look at that as, you know, as a beautiful thing. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, as a manager and a trainer, I'm busy, but I'm real happy to be able to be, you know, in the last 2 months, I had fighters fighting IFL, Pride, UFC, and TKO. And I look at those four organizations as the elite in mixed martial arts right now. And, you know, I'm proud that those organizations have evolved to the level of where they are and that there can be four at that level at the same time.
And then another member of Team Tompkins who's also catching quite a bit of hype and via some key IFL victories is Chris Horodecki. People in Canada, you know, he's been kind of a hidden secret, if you will, for a little while now, and I think the word's getting out in the States because of his performances down there. What did it mean for him, Sean, taking out a guy like Ryan Schultz, who has a pretty big name himself, being a member of Team Quest, known as a tough wrestler, good stand-up guy? How huge was that win for Chris?
Well, I think, as far as his career, it's going to make it, I mean, it's obviously getting out there that everybody's going to know who Chris Horodecki is now. As far as he's concerned, Chris Horodecki has more confidence than most any fighter I've ever trained before. And he doesn't really get involved in studying, you know, wins and losses and, you know, what one person thinks of another. He just really comes into the gym and trains hard. And, I mean, he's just turned 19 in September. He's been Mark Hominick's sparring and training partner since he was 13 or 14 years old. He's trained with me for that long. You know, I think of Ryan Schultz as a formidable opponent for him, but at the same time, I really did, you know, I was confident with the fact that Horodecki had way too many tools for Ryan Schultz, and that I was pretty confident the fact that Schultz was coming in with too much confidence that he was probably going to get knocked out. And you know, that's pretty much where that belt went. So it's, you know, Horodecki's a superstar in every aspect. Any promotion that gets him, or you know, they're going to be happy with him. Not only can he perform, but I mean, the crowd loves him wherever he goes.
With Chris, did he have a chance? Did Ryan try to take him down? I mean, I only read a brief summary of the fight, and it hasn't been shown up here yet. Of course, I think it will be eventually on Canada Sportsnet up here in Canada, and then Fox Sports down in the States. But that was, you know, I think a lot of people thought that Ryan was going to try to take Chris down, and Chris has got some wrestling capabilities as well. Did Ryan try to take Chris down, Sean, and how was Chris's wrestling, if so?
Yeah, well, I mean, Ryan, for one thing, I mean, I respect Ryan Schultz. He did exactly what he told us he was going to do. He came out there and he stood with Chris because, for some reason, he thought he could. After about 3 full-blown kicks to the head, he went for a double leg. And Chris shut him down real quick, and that's pretty much where that fight was ended at that point, because Ryan realized he couldn't take Chris down. Chris out-sprawled him, and then Chris kind of went in for the kill on that one. But yeah, Chris is just such a complete MMA fighter, and so young. It's gonna be hard for any 155 or any organization to beat that kid.
Well, do you have an expert's opinion? I know you've trained a lot with Jeff Curran and his team, and the Wolfpack have advanced the finals, as have the Silverbacks. So you've got Ryan Schultz going up against Bart Pawlowski. Do you have a pick on that one, Sean, knowing both those guys a little bit?
As far as Schultz and Palaszewski, I think Bart will take that fight. After seeing Schultz get rocked by a couple of Chris Wardetsky's head kicks, I've seen the way Bart boxes, and I've seen what he's done to people, and I've actually had the opportunity of sparring with Bart before, and I think he has too much power in his punches for Schultz to deal with, and I mean, Bart's a wonderful grappler, a great wrestler, so once again, I think I don't think Schultz has as many dimensions as he does, so.
And then you also mentioned you had some fighters in Pride, and you were in Dan Henderson's corner when he recently defeated Vitor Belfort at the Pride North American debut. What was it like for you, Sean, to coach a guy at the level of Dan Henderson? And what was the game plan going in? And you guys as coaches, you and Matt Lindland, et cetera, what were your thoughts on Dan's performance overall?
Well, I mean, first of all, to work with Dan, that's the second fight in Dan's career that I've worked with him. I worked with him for his last fight with Masaki as well. And we've decided, you know, as far as where I am located here in Canada, that's my second priority is Team Quest in Temecula, California with Dan and furthering his career as well as working with some of the fighters out there. I love working with those guys, and Dan and I have a great relationship as friends as well as training. We work really well together, and I think it proved it in his fight with Vitor, because as dominating as Dan was on the ground, I think everybody, just expects him to be that dominating on the ground, but if you look at that fight, the way Dan is boxing now and the way he's throwing his punches, he's not as one-dimensional with his right hand. I mean, He threw combinations in that fight and landed. If he threw six punches, he landed 5 to 6 of those punches on Vitor. And I don't think Vitor expected that. So I'm real happy. I'm real proud of the job that we're doing together and the way it's working out. And dealing with their camp is it's an amazing thing. If anybody that's listening gets to work with Team Quest and Temecula, I mean, get a chance, you know, go do it. And other than working with Team Top, because in Canada, that's where I tell them to go. Because they've got some great guys out there training them, and they got Ryan Parsons, is just an incredible guy to have in the corner. Matt Lindland, I mean, these guys, they've been in the sport long enough that they just take it to a new level. And I'm really happy, real proud to be part of that. So, as far as his game plan with Vitor, I mean, if anybody watches the fight, I think you see, I mean, he followed our game plan perfectly. And we did what we wanted to do. We beat Vitor down and, you know, took his confidence away in the first round, and pretty much Dan did what he wanted to do after that. So, yeah, we're happy. We're just waiting to hear if Dan's going to fight on New Year's Eve or in the February show, but regardless, I will be there 100%.
Well, before I let you go, I just want to give you a chance to maybe give us a little info on anything else that Team Tompkins has got going. I mean, we've gone through some of the more high-profile guys, but, you know, you've got a ton of other fighters, someone like Aaron Treguer, et cetera. Anyone else that we should, either Canadian or American fans, be paying attention to? What's Team Tompkins? What else is going on?
Yeah, well, I've got my, Aaron Treguer and Chris Clements and the guys that are coming up through just behind Hominick and Stoudemire. They're all going to be returning to the cage come February 9th at TKO, and we're all looking forward to that. I really see Chris Clements coming on as a big 170-er, to hit the scene. And quite possibly, I mean, TKO looks like it's, for the UFC, so I would really like to see Chris Clements jumping into UFC soon. I think he's ready for it. Aaron Treguer won't be far behind. So, you know, that's our next step. We've got TKO coming out. We've got UFC in the near future, in the new year. Pride with Dan and the IFL. I mean, we're doing tons of stuff with them now, so.
Well, if you ever want to, shill off any of your frequent air mile points to me, buddy, I'll be more than willing.
The last time I talked to you was just the day before the TKO show, and I returned home 1 week ago. I've been gone that long. You know, wow. I was out with Dan for Pride. I actually ended up getting an apartment in Vegas because I'm out there training all the guys from the Anaconda in Vegas now. Full time, as well as helping Forrest Griffin prepare for UFC. I had Martin Kampman in the last UFC Ultimate Fighter finale from Denmark, and I helped him with his training. So it's good to be home. I'm going to be around here until the new year, and then back to work on the road again.
All right, man. Well, I hope you have you get some downtime and can just enjoy the success that Team Tompkins has had, especially in the last couple of years. Thanks again for coming on the program.
Well, thanks a lot for having me, and if anybody wants to keep track of me, just check out TeamTompkins.com.
Hey, guys, Kelsey Mode here from Full Contact Fighter Radio. Listen, if you have any comments, questions, or just want to flat-out tell me off, contact me at radio@fcfighter.com. That address, again, is radio@fcfighter.com.
Any correspondence that is sent to Mr. Moe must be presented in business letter format and aerial script with a font point no larger than 12 and no smaller than 8. All letters must be written in UK English and must be received by Mr. Moe before no later than 12 hours prior to the posting of this program. Any fiscal donations must be in Canadian currency, and please pay no attention to this previous statement.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and Brendan, you know, I said to Sean in the interview, I compared him to Monty Cox, the Canadian equivalent to Monty Cox, just in the sense that, you know, people often say Monty Cox is the busiest guy in mixed martial arts, and I think Sean Tompkins very, very well might be one of the busiest Canadians in mixed martial arts. And every time I talk to that guy, he's just got so much going on. I mean, he basically just finished telling us that he hasn't been home since the last time he talked to us on this show. So he had just arrived home, I guess, a couple days ago. So it's crazy what these guys, the kind of traveling they do now, and then all the events they attend. It's nuts.
Yeah, it's interesting how guys, when they get older, you know, a lot of the guys that started out in MMA, you may have a girlfriend or something like that, but not too many things to tie you down so you can spend all your time training and goofing around. But as these experienced fighters get older and have more commitments, it'll be interesting to see how they really balance their ordinary lives with their fighting lives, and how you can work to achieve that balance.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I mean, no disrespect to Monty Cox. I mean, obviously, he manages far more fighters than Sean Tompkins does, because Monty Cox, you know, he manages a ton of fighters. So, I mean, it was kind of a comparison, just joking around. They're both extremely busy men. However, in saying that, Sean also is involved on a day-to-day basis on the training aspect of things as well. So, you know, he's in there sparring and conducting drills. And, I mean, he said in the interview that he finally had to get a place in Vegas just to be... to have a place to stay at when he's the assistant coach of the Anacondas, which trains out of L.A. or Vegas, you know, in that area. So he's back and forth between there and London, Ontario. So for people who might not know, I mean, London, Ontario is on the absolute, you know, almost the absolute opposite side of the continent. So you throw in all these events, you know, he was cornering, I think it was Martin Kapman recently at one of the last UFCs. You throw in all the events that he attends, whether it's the IFL, UFC, etc., he's traveling a lot.
Yeah, it's amazing, because it's a significant distance to travel in still, and just to be on the road all the time and have no place in your actual, you know, it's cool to go away for a weekend or two or on a holiday, but, you know, when you're constantly traveling around, you don't have your own crap with you, you don't have your own books or your own TV or your clothes or anything like that, and you're living out of hotels, it can get kind of... grading, and then of course you have to hang around with these MMA guys all the time, so God knows that can be grading.
Yeah, you would know better than anyone else, buddy. some things I wanted to touch on that are coming up this weekend's kind of slow as far as big high profile fights go in the world of MMA, and then there'll be a couple shows in December, and then of course January's busy as well. There's some Pride shows coming up too, so this weekend's kind of slow in that sense of the bigger name shows, whether it be the UFC or Pride, etc. But, you know, there's a couple things going on that are coming up. Jason Miller is going to be fighting Frank Trigg on December 2nd, I believe, which is an interesting welterweight matchup. And I think, Brendan, when you look at this fight, based on Frank's problems as of late, as far as in the performances of his last few fights, Jason Miller's got to be a favorite going into this.
Yeah, it's going down at middleweight, isn't it? Isn't it 185?
Right, sorry, it is 185.
Or 183?
Right. Yeah, right.
Well, it'll be interesting to see a sort of bigger Trigg. I was listening to an interview with him the other day, and he's walking around at 200 pounds or something like that.
Wow.
And he was also talking about getting drunk at a wedding. So, yeah, we'll see how seriously he's taking his training. And maybe it sounded like, if anything, Trigg in his previous fights has overtrained. So, who knows? Maybe he'll come into this with a new attitude. And but yeah, I agree with you. I think he's definitely an underdog to Miller at 185. Actually, I think I can't think of more many fighters who wouldn't be an underdog to Miller right now. He's looked really good in his last couple fights. Again, a little bit sloppy, not as tight as he could be. But Miller fights with a sort of very much a lackadaisical attitude. And I don't want to say it's undisciplined because it's really a style, and it's kind of a style I think fighters like Parisian sort of share that as well, you know, and they get on the ground and they're not scared to give up position, they're not scared to go for some submissions and stuff like that. So very, very entertaining, a lot of scrambling, and they don't, you know, fight only to maintain dominant positions. So, yeah, it'll be interesting because Trigg, I think, is not like that. I think he's kind of like a 1-2-3 type of fighter, so it'll be interesting if Trigg, to see if Trigg can impose some kind of structure on this fight. Because if he can't, I think he's in for a tough night.
Yeah, and you're right. I think Jason Miller has looked far better at 185, as you mentioned. You know, he was somewhat looked emaciated a little bit at 170, and it seems like he's a much more powerful, stronger fighter at 185. I think when you have to break down this fight, Jason's going to obviously have the advantage over Frank, I would say, in the submission aspect of the game of mixed martial arts, stand up as well. I think, from what I've seen both these guys do, and it's not that they're necessarily, you know, noted as stand-up fighters, strikers. So I would still have to give Miller the advantage in that. So I think the key here for Trigg is whether or not he'll be able to get Jason down to the ground and administer punishment from that respect and control him, as you mentioned. And, you know, if Frank wins, then all of a sudden, you know, they might throw him up against Robbie Lawler in a few months. Apparently he's got a hand injury, which has forced him out of this upcoming show, Icon Sports Show. But it's not inconceivable that if Frank wins and then can get another win over Robbie Lawler, then, you know, maybe a path back to the UFC or some bigger profile, even higher profile fights could be in store.
Yeah, it seems like Icon has established, it's almost like a neutral ground, you know, where fighters can go and... Someone else mentioned the other day, and I can't remember if it was an Apprentice interview or something else. They were just sort of pontificating on what they might do, and they said, "Oh, I may go pick up an Icon fight or something like that." So it seems like kind of a safe testing ground, and maybe because it's tough to actually see these fights. So, you know, I don't know what's going to happen again with the television. I'd love to watch the fight, but you know, they're typically the kind of fights that you don't actually get to see. So. So I think there's maybe even a certain amount of safety in that, you know?
Yeah, and the mixed martial arts scene in Hawaii is absolutely huge. I mean, having talked to some of the guys that have competed in those events, it's unbelievable. I mean, they get thousands of people to the fights. It's covered on local media. There's several promotions that conduct shows there on a regular basis. So Hawaii is a huge hot spot for mixed martial arts. There's absolutely no question about it.
Yeah, well, it's traditionally a martial arts mecca because it's literally where you know the Asia meets America, right? So there's a lot of wonderful influences and a lot of probably you could argue that that's one of the places as Brazil is that you know MMA or freestyle fighting was probably born. Yeah, I think one of the Gracies, Hawaii was one of the first Gracies. I remember in the early 90s I was in Hawaii and I went down to train at a Gracie school there. It was one of the first ones in North America, I think.
Yeah, well, I believe wasn't Carlson Gracie, was a junior, or is it Carlson Gracie himself actually started training there? The Anu brothers were training under him for quite some time, and that's how I think a great deal of the Brazilian jiu-jitsu scene was born in Hawaii. If I'm not mistaken, I mean, I could be wrong, but... And then in your neck of the woods, you got King of the Cage Canada's show in Edmonton, and you're going to get to go see some fights on Sunday, Brennan.
King of the Cage Canada. King of the Cage, Sunday afternoon. And this is actually a... You know what I really like about these promotions? What a great time to have a fight card, you know? Sunday afternoon, nothing's going on. You go down, nice intimate arena, you watch an MMA. It's great. Props to King of the Cage for doing it. I think it's awesome. I actually much prefer that venue than the greasy late Saturday night, you know, drunken idiots yelling and booing and catcalling. I much prefer this style of venue. Who knows? Maybe we can take the kids.
Yeah, I didn't realize. I just did a write-up for my weekly column, and I didn't even note the start time, actually. So, and until you informed me that it was earlier in the day, I agree. That is kind of cool. I'm not sure if that was like a scheduling conflict or if there was an actual thought process behind booking it earlier. You know, I don't know. But some interesting matchups on this card. Brendan, from a Canadian mixed martial arts perspective, I think the one that immediately stands out for me is Ricardo Francois taking on Jason Day. And Jason Day, you saw in a recent MFC, he lost in his title bid to Victor Valimaki, who became the MFC light heavyweight champion and is heading on to the UFC. And you know, it's crazy. Jason Day dislocated his jaw in that September card that you covered. And, I mean, the guy's won 3 fights already since then.
He's certainly not one to take too much time off.
No.
Because he literally, in that fight, he looked like his head was broken.
Yeah.
You know, he could, he was, you know, sort of standing up after for the judge's decision or for the decision announcement, and it literally, he was pale. It looked like he was going to fall right over and die. So, yeah.
Well, apparently with a chiropractor, they got his jaw in line again. It wasn't broken. He's fought, like I mentioned, 3 times, most recently 2 weeks ago. At the MFC, which is another Edmonton mixed martial arts promotion, he took on Sean Marchand and defeated him. And that was the guy who was supposed to fight Victor Valimaki until he was, you know, signed the UFC contract. And so in a guy taking on Ricardo Francois, who actually fought for the light heavyweight title for King of the Cage a few months ago now against Trevor Galbraith. King of the Cage is Canada's light heavyweight champion who fought in Pride recently. And Ricardo Francois is a big, lanky striker. He's 6'6". I think he fought Wes Sims once before and beat Wes Sims, which captured some headlines back then. I don't know if that would capture as many headlines nowadays, but at the time, it certainly did up here in Canada, at least. And I think his most notable performance was actually a split decision loss he dropped to Patrick Cote, I think it was, which was in 2005. So that's going to be an interesting matchup. It sounds like whoever wins that fight is going to go on to a possible title shot against Galbraith. So you got, I think that fight, Brendan, is the one that stands out the most. The main event to me, which is Ruben Villarreal, Warpath versus Wade Hamilton, 2 American heavyweights. I don't know how much of, other than it being a spectacle and probably an entertaining slugfest, I'm not sure as far as it affecting the rankings or future careers so much. I don't know how much that fight, the main event, has on the line in that respect.
I want to see. I'm only going to pay attention to see if Warpath's bruises have gone away from his fight with Boss back in July.
Yeah. Well, are you excited about that main event or?
No.
No.
Not particularly. No.
And there's a couple other ones that are worth mentioning. Jared Kilkenny is an undefeated heavyweight out of Lethbridge, same school, same camp as Jason Day. He's got some wins behind him now. He's taking on Tim Haig, who's a heavyweight from Edmonton. So that'll be interesting for you, Brendan. And then you got Jacob McDonald fighting Elmer Waterhen. And I don't know, did you catch this last week's Hardcore Fighting Championships on the Score Network? They showed Jacob McDonald's last fight against Jason McKay.
No, you know, I downloaded the first one. I haven't watched it yet, and I don't know. Are they doing a weekly show?
Every Wednesday at 12 Eastern, 9 Pacific.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. It's funny because the Score is not really a sports network, but it was a highlight channel.
Yeah.
And now they sort of progress into other programming, so it's not like the kind of thing you flip. You know, I don't follow really any sports. Period. So I have no reason to, you know, flip through the sports scores, so yeah, it's not something that I don't know if they're going to get much flip action there, but I got to check it out. It sounds like they could be moving into some interesting stuff. And there's a lot of big TV shows announced coming up. A lot of promotions, a few big promotions in trouble, it sounds like, and a few. Big contenders coming out. So there's rumors that Vince McMahon was going to put his greasy fingers into MMA. And that was kind of a wild rumor. And then the more confirmed one is that Showtime is going to start promoting MMA, which could be huge and have a huge impact on the And now I think a lot of fighters are basically bailing out of that promotion.
And as well, Cesar Gracie resigned from the World Fighter Organization, I believe is the,
right,
the correct name of that. So
yeah, these guys haven't even had a show yet.
Yeah, so yeah, you're right. There's, you know, a lot of rumors circulating around in the last week, and as far as the WFA goes, there's plenty of rumors. I mean, we had Matt Littland on the show, and he had, you know, remarked on the fact that his contract was ending. I believe he said in November, so it should be over by now.
Mm-hmm.
With that organization, and he even said that he had no knowledge of when, in fact, a show would actually materialize. And they had made some other big signings. You know, Heath Herring was supposed to be fighting for that organization, and that certainly would have been, I think it's safe to say, would be probably the best American heavyweight that hasn't competed in the UFC to be brought in to an American card in quite some time. And that's something maybe we should talk a little bit about here is, if that does indeed fall through, why doesn't the UFC, you know, we discussed this in great detail the other day, had Tim Sylvian, etc. Heath Herring would be, in my mind, how could that guy not be a perfect fit for the UFC?
I think he would be a perfect fit for the UFC. He's really well-spoken. He's a good, dynamic fighter. He's an American, first of all.
He's charismatic.
He's got a goofy haircut.
And could you see him being a contender, Brendan, in the UFC heavyweight division?
Well, I think he'd be an immediate contender.
Yeah.
I think he's big enough to hang with Sylvia, definitely. His losses are his losses at Pride are all excellent losses. And he's not scared to punch you during the ref's instructions. So that's on automatic edge.
Well, on that note, Brendan, I got to go watch my monster truck rally and maybe go stomp some guys who don't like monster truck afterwards. So I got to go.
I just actually got the snow carved out of the wheels of my monster truck so I could lock out the hubs and go do some rad donuts in the shopping mall parking lot down the street from my house while listening to a bootleg recording of Accept.
Cool.
Yes.
Only things you can enjoy while warmed by moonshine and good old Edmonton.
Yeah, that radiator moonshine, though, is really rotting my gut these days. when you're spinning donuts and you spontaneously go blind, sucks.
Yeah. All right, well, now that no one's listening to the show and probably never will again, let's end it, buddy. You have a good weekend. And oh, yeah, happy Thanksgiving to any of our American listeners. It's not Thanksgiving up here in Canada, but thanks for tuning in and enjoy your turkey dinners.